Hey listeners, it's Tim. Can I just grab a quick minute before the show starts? As you've probably heard, Top Music Live, our dynamic two-day in-person conference for music teachers, is being held in Sydney during the Term 2 Australian school holidays over the 15th and 16th of April 2026. Our presenters have now been announced: Dr. Anita Collins, yours truly, Elisa Milne, Samantha Coates, Rebecca Stewart, Mark Matthews, Paul Myatt, Amber Hammond. The list goes on. It is an incredible lineup, and I just cannot wait to share this experience with you. This innovative event is unlike any other conference you've attended, unless you came to Piano Pivot Live in 2020, of course. We'll have amazing keynotes, interactive workshops, live on-stage teaching demonstrations, and opportunities to connect with fellow educators, all in a welcoming, relaxed atmosphere with full catering. See the complete two-day schedule and book your ticket now at topmusiclive.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tim here, and before we begin today's episode, I just want to acknowledge the coronavirus situation which is affecting all of us around the world right now. I realise that this is a difficult time and you may be feeling anxious, upset, worried, and uncertain about how this will affect both you and your teaching business. In order to stay as current as possible, we'll be releasing new videos and articles regularly on the blog, social media, and YouTube to help you navigate these challenges. We'll share advice about deciding whether to continue teaching in person, how to protect yourself if you do, and how to switch to online lessons if and when the time is right for you. If you're a Top Music Pro member, you already have access to webinars, discussions, and expert online teachers ready to answer questions in the forums, and we've got more workshops and courses on this topic in the pipeline. If you've got any questions, then we've set up a quick voicemail service. You can leave us a voicemail at speakpipe.com/topmusic. That's speakpipe.com/topmusic. Or just send us an email, support@topmusic.co. And rest assured, the entire Top Music community is here to help support and guide all our listeners through this challenging period. Keep up the great work, stay positive, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Well, hi everyone, it's Tim here and I'm back for another year of podcasting fun with you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in and listening, and I do apologize, it's been a little bit of a wait since we had our last episode in mid-December. I know lots of you have been emailing and asking on social, when are we coming back, when's the podcast restarting? So very excited that today we are kicking off the new Topcast. As you will have seen, the artwork has changed, the name has changed, and we are now a brand new named podcast called The Topcast, which of course goes in line with all the rebranding that I've been doing of my own business from timtopham.com over to topmusic.co. So this is all part of the process that we've been following for that rebranding since November. We actually started the process about 6 months before that. It's been a big job, and I'm delighted that I got the opportunity at Piano Pivot Live to formally launch the new brand to everyone who was there, and that's now rolling out across all our websites and social media channels, as you've probably seen. I can't believe it's already March. How crazy is that? The time has flown, and of course it has been a long break because so much has been happening since we took a break in December. And of course the biggest thing was our Piano Pivot Live conference, where we had I think altogether probably about 150 people when we count all our music teacher delegates, our exhibitors, our sponsors, we had students, we had performers and guests, all here in Melbourne for 2 days. It was an incredible experience, an event that I could not have hoped for better. It really came together. I have an amazing team who helped me put that on, and it sounds like from our delegates, they just can't wait for us to do it again. It was so good. And you know, just some of those little highlights, like having round tables for people to be able to, you know, really get to know other people there rather than lecture theatre style seating. We had incredible food at Ridges in Melbourne. We had fantastic sponsors. I have to give a shout out to my principal sponsor, Kauai, who made the event possible and was a great support through all of the planning stages and through the actual live event. So thank you so much to Kauai for that. So it was a great experience. I know not everyone could be there, so I wanted today and in the next four episodes to give you a bit of a taste of some of the keynote and workshop speakers that we had presenting at Piano Pivot Live for those of you who weren't able to join us. It was an absolute delight being able to choose from scratch my favorite speakers to speak at my own event. And I had a list of names of the people who I'd seen present before, people who'd been on my podcast, authors of books, other bloggers, and amazing teachers from around the world who I asked to come and join us, and many of whom were able to do it, which was wonderful. And, you know, it really is a highlight when you get incredible speakers who know how to present and engage with an audience and include everyone and aren't those kind of people that will read from a script behind a lectern and things like that. And that was the case with all of our speakers. And the four who I'm going to be introducing you to this month, I'm just going to keep under wraps. We're going to introduce them one by one, starting with today. So this is episode number 181 of the Topcast. And I did want to give a very special welcome to my Top Music Pro members. It was great to meet so many of you at Piano Pivot Live. I love each and every one of you and all the hard work that you're doing every day in your studios with your students. Keep it all up. Now, if you're looking for show notes for today, just head to topmusic.co/episode181. All right, so we're going to kick off today's episode with one of our speakers. He was actually our keynote from day two. And even though he's an Aussie, he lives in Canberra, I'm in Melbourne, we're only about an hour's flight apart, he is actually better known in the United States. And of course, I'm talking about Philip Johnston, one of music education's best known authors and lateral thinkers. He's recorded for Warner Music as a pianist. He's composed for Alfred's Publishing, the AMEB, and Trinity Exam Systems, and is the author of many of music teaching's best-selling texts, including The Dynamic Studio, The Practice Revolution, Scales Bootcamp, Rhythm Bootcamp, Practicopedia. There's a whole lot of them. Philip currently runs one of Australia's largest school-based martial arts programs and splits his creative time between writing, composing, recording, and co-developing the app version of his Scales Bootcamp book. Look out for his Rachmaninoff Chopin series on YouTube as well. Very, very impressive. Music that I still struggle with, and he's playing with ease, it seems. And you can find out more about Philip at philipjohnston.studio. So as I mentioned before, it was great fun being able to choose my favorite speakers. And one of the people at the top of my list was Philip. And we've known each other for some time now, ever since I read his Practice Revolution book, and it did actually revolutionize my approach to practice. I wrote about it on my blog. And in actual fact, it was one of the first articles that I started putting out there to other teachers and sharing with other teachers. And we connected pretty soon after that and have kept in touch ever since. And it's just been wonderful to see all the different things that he's been putting out for music teachers. So at Piano Pivot Live, he took a bit of a different approach with his session. And everyone was, like, it was so much fun to watch. And so if you haven't got a virtual ticket yet, I'll tell you about how to get those later, where you can actually watch Philip presenting on stage and see his slides all in our virtual lounge. It is a really funny presentation, and it's a really thought-provoking presentation. So here's the premise. Philip said, if you had $100 million to spend on designing, constructing, and fitting out the world's best resource piano teaching studio, what might it look like? We'll take a tour inside one such facility and discover how all those insane new teaching options are easily achievable with technology you've already got. So that, with that being the premise, let's jump in and hear Philip on stage at Piano Pivot Live 2020.
Tim hasn't heard me speak before, but one of the things that I do is I usually pack five-hour presentations into 45 minutes. So we absolutely will not get through all of this. But this is all based on something I saw on April 23rd last year, and you all probably remember where you were if you saw this in the news, and it has nothing whatsoever to do with music teaching. Now, this gentleman here, we have Marco Franco, I think his name is, and I'm not sure if you can make out on the screen, but $768.4 million is what he won in Powerball. And to put that in perspective, the 0.4, which has been so casually appended to the end of that, is worth $400,000. And I don't think he even notices it. Now, the reason that's interesting, it's not possible to hear something like that and not to start spending it precariously. You all are right now, right? And so it got me thinking that given that fires up people's imaginations so effectively, and I want your imaginations fired up today, it led to a thought experiment. And so what I want you to imagine is that you have a former student, not even necessarily a good student, it doesn't matter, but they really enjoyed their lessons, and they've gone on to Silicon Valley and they have done big things. With Zabadoodle here, please don't Google this, I've made this up, all right? So this work with me here, it's all hypothetical. And gone on to such big things that, grateful for piano lessons that he enjoyed once upon a time, he has decided to gift you with $100 million on the condition that you use every cent of that to outfit the world's most incredible piano teaching studio. And right now, again, and you can't help it, you're starting to spend that vicariously. And that's where I want you for all of this. And I want you swapping ideas about this later on. And if you think of things that I didn't talk about today, and you will, I'm going to be around. So come and talk to me. And I will shamelessly steal those ideas. And if I do this presentation again down the track at some point, I will reuse them. So that's all good. You'll be thinking about this now. And I thought to actually help with this, I want you to picture a few different things. I want you to picture what you'd build. I want you to picture what you would then equip this building with. And then probably a more difficult question, but I think it's the most interesting question, is how much, if at all, would your teaching actually change, even if you were the proud owner of this $100 million studio? And the whole point of today is that that'll tell you a lot about your current studio. It'll tell you a lot about your priorities, because if this really is blue, you can do anything with $100 million. It'll tell you a lot about what's possibly missing from your studio. And then throughout the presentation, the point I'll keep trying to make is that $100 million is not the obstacle to whatever it is that you think of. All these wild ideas you're having right now, the obstacle is almost certainly not financial, it's technological. And you probably have already the technology that you need that will get you 9/10 of the way to getting whatever idea you've got in your head now done. And we're going to look at some examples of that today. So here's how we're going to handle this. Somebody has left me unsupervised with Photoshop. And so I'm going to take you on a tour in a second of what my idea of a $100 million studio would be, and not all of it. We're going to look at six spaces in particular in this incredible resource. And we'll do a little daydreaming about how cool it would be if that was actually yours. But then we will stop after each one and have a look at how you can actually produce or reproduce the essence of whatever the idea is that this seemingly impossible resource unlocks for your studio by using stuff that you probably already have, but by using it a little differently. So here we are, we've got $100 million, there's time to create a brand new studio. The first thing we're going to do though is we're going to get a logo. And the reason we're going to get a logo is that half the time today I'm going to be talking about hypothetical studios, and the other half I'm going to be talking about things that are very real, and I don't want you mixing up which is which. So we're going to have this logo you're about to see is for all the hypothetical stuff, the $100 million studio that doesn't exist. And the good news about having $100 million is you can afford a good graphic designer. And so I thought I'd show you some of the contenders. I wasn't too wild about these. These look like what's in the top left-hand corner of most piano teacher stationery. And so I wanted something that was tasteful and classy, something that says professionalism and artistry. And so for our $100 million studio today, I've decided to go with this. Which I think it's subtle, it's timeless. And the great thing about timeless and subtle logos is you can use them anywhere. So I've got a student here who's rocking this on a T-shirt. And then to prove my dedication to Piano Pivot, we actually went and road tested this in a public setting to see whether my phone might ring or not. And so here we are. And so far, in fact, my phone hasn't rung, which is a good thing because, and the whole reason we're looking at the logo now, this studio does not exist. All right, so you can't call it. All right, so we're across this distinction now. Okay, so let's have a look at the studio itself. I don't know about you, I've done most of my, I taught piano privately for 20 years, and I did most of my teaching from home, from converted living rooms or converted bedrooms, and there wasn't lots of room. So the very first thing I've decided we'll have in our $100 million studio is there's going to be plenty of space, so the kids in my town, when they're going to piano lessons, are now coming here. Yes. So there's possibilities inside this. I showed this... I showed this graphic to my son looking for praise, and he said it looks like one of those buildings that gets blown up in the final 10 minutes of James Bond movie. Anyway, that's panel listens. So we're going to take a look inside. There is plenty of space. And the teaching resource that I want is actually on the first floor. So we're going to go in past reception past. Now, we might actually revisit this if there's time, and there won't be. The parent conferencing suite, and then down the corridor to the metrics lab. Now, the reason we're starting with this is I wanted to start with something that I don't think you would have thought of in that little vicarious thinking verse that happened right at the start of all of this. It occurs to me that piano teachers, if you strip away the art from all of this, and we really do find that difficult, I'm happy to talk about that on another day, we are actually at our essence coaches. And if I was spending $100 million fitting out the world's most amazing piano teaching studio, the very first thing that I would do is I would speak to the finest coaches on the planet. And it doesn't need to be music. Basketball, football, tennis, athletics, gymnastics. And I want to find out what it is that they are not only able to do, but things that they are only able to do because of resources that they have that perhaps we don't. And on that enormous list of resources they have that we don't, because some of you might have noticed that some of those activities I mentioned a second ago are a little better funded than music is this one is king of them. It is the capacity for the student that you are working with to see exactly what it is that you just saw, and for you to be able to draw attention to the aspects of all the things that are going on that you want to focus on right now. And so we have a tennis serve here where the conversation as a tennis coach, and it rhymes with the conversations we have as piano teachers about pedaling or dynamics or whatever else. We want them to focus on the angle of the forearm prior to the serve. We want them to focus on the positioning of their feet, and we want them looking at the sight line of the ball toss. And they are looking at all those things, and they can't help but look at all of these things because we've highlighted for them with a little graphic help. Strip away those little yellow lines, and they are free to focus on absolutely anything, and the big picture is something that, by definition, you can't focus on. And as piano teachers, we spend most of our time not telling the truth. We will hear somebody play something, they will get 75 different things wrong, and we will choose to ignore 74 of them and focus on one right now, but how do you get the student to focus on that one as well? Now, the way we do it is that they take our word for it. They will play something, and then they will look to us, and they're waiting. And we give them the feedback, and we tell them that. We always say something nice first. That was very excellent, and I love how you play. And then we get to number one on our list of 75, which is, however, we do need to talk about your pedaling, all right? And so, and the student, and the reason they were pedaling badly in the first place is because they can't hear it, now takes your word for that, and they will nod, and they will obediently do all the things that you ask for with pedaling, but at no point was this their idea. Tennis coaches, instead, can do what I call same side of the desk teaching. The student will do something, and then they'll say, come over here, have a look at this. And then together, on the same side of the desk, they're able to analyse this, and it means then the thing they're fixing, the student actually probably spotted in the first place, and they spotted it because we steered their attention to it. But because they spotted it, they're now more invested in fixing it than they would have been otherwise. So how does this look with music? And the whole idea of looking with music is a little strange because this is an oral thing. And not many of the things we're fixing are based on how they actually look. So here it is in the studio, and there's immediately a problem. So this particular facility was $4.5 million to build, and a lot of testing. And the only downside, which became evident after we'd actually gone ahead and built the thing, and I was cross with the architects, is that it takes a two-year training course for both the teacher and the student to understand anything that's happening on the screen. But everything up here to do with the students playing is actually visible. Not only do you not need a $100 million studio to produce something like this, you can do it a lot better simply by using the following. If you have a MIDI-enabled keyboard, and if you don't have a MIDI-enabled keyboard in your piano studio, but let me put it this way, and we'll talk about this another time too. If I could only have one piano in a piano teaching studio, it would be digital. I would not have an acoustic in there, and it's not because digital pianos sound anything like acoustic pianos. They don't, and the action's all wrong and all those things that you know. It's because it unlocks so many possibilities that you just can't do otherwise. This is one of them. So we've got a MIDI-enabled keyboard of some sort. Doesn't matter what. We've got a laptop of some sort. Again, really doesn't matter what. And we need a digital audio workstation of some sort, which is a very fancy word for GarageBand, which comes with your Mac in any case, if you're running that, or any of the products down here that you will see do indeed cost less than $100 million. And they are very straightforward to use. Here's how straightforward. That two-year training course we are about to do in 5.5 minutes for your new resource here with your laptop and your keyboard. It works a little bit like this. Anyone who's used these programs will be familiar with this. And if you haven't used these programs, the idea becomes obvious pretty quickly. This is a student who's just played a G major scale. The hardest thing to tell with these programs is which note has just been played, but that's the thing we're least interested in, because that's the thing usually that students can hear for themselves. If they played a G major scale and there's a note split or is in the wrong place, that's easy enough. So we don't worry about that so much. What they can see with no training at all is one of these notes is a different colour. And the reason it's a different colour is because these programs were designed for composers. These are composing tools. And these colour codings tell you at a glance how loud the notes are. Light blue for pianissimo, green for piano. Anything that is at the brown and the red end of the spectrum is getting loud, and you are looking graphically at one of the millions of students worldwide who, when they play a 1-2-3, 1-2-3-4-5 scale, do a thumb bump on the fourth note. All right, and now they can actually see this. And the challenge then, rather than the metric being, do this again until I smile at you, we can spin the laptop around at the end of their playthrough and then say, head back to your keyboard, try this again. I want all the notes the same colour. I don't even care which colour. Right, and then to give them agency over this so that they trust it all, you can invite them. I want you to produce a scale for me where the last note is really bright red and tell me they won't get amongst that straight away. And so now we've got a common vocabulary. Let's look though, we're going to look at half a dozen different students now. They're all playing G major scales. This is going to tell us something different about each of them. Let's go on to the second one. Well, no thumb bumps happening here. So, in fact, you can see that all these notes, there's a student playing a quiet G major scale at the moment, but it's all fairly even. However, look at the vertical lines, which are measuring where the main beats are in the subdivisions, and you can see that consistently this student is early. This is someone who's rushing the beat a little bit. And again, they can now see something that perhaps before they couldn't hear, they couldn't hear, and now we've got a conduit to being able to bridge that. We go on to a third student. Most of these notes are nicely on time. All of these notes here are pretty much the same volume. The fourth and the fifth fingers are collapsing into each other, and tell me that isn't something you've seen lots of times before. This student here is getting all of those things right, but this is a picture of what a student who is not playing legato produces when you put it through the keyboard like this, and you can see that these notes don't quite make it to the next note. What we're looking for is just a hint of an overlap like this, which again, we can talk about in the abstract, or we can give them this tool. And this is absolutely not for every student. Like any other tool you've got in the studio, this is another way of looking at things when the first couple of ways you've tried haven't actually broken through. And for some students, this will be absolutely their favorite way of doing things, particularly in an age where students are going up with computer games, and they absolutely are. So, two hands together this time. I invite you now to look at the start of the right hand compared with the start of the left hand, and you'll see that we have this. This is pretty much bang on the beat here. This is slightly before. This is slightly before. This is slightly after, and so the two hands aren't coinciding. And again, this sort of split hands thing we've seen lots of times before. Well, actually, heard it is the way we talk about it. Now students can actually see it. And I'll just go back. Just give me a second. All right. And this one now, which a student didn't play, but this is your second last exam. We're having an exam straight after this just to prove that you passed this course on how to use this, our 5.5 minute course. So this is your warm-up exam for this. Student didn't play this, but I want you to see if you, after the short amount of time you've been using this, can actually analyse what you think this scale might sound like, even though you've only seen the visual output. All right. So a couple of things that are jumping out at me. Whatever's happening here, the first note and the fifth note of the scale are really loud. Everything else is really quiet. We're not trying to troubleshoot. We're just describing what's here. The right hand is staccato. The left hand is legato. And the left and the right hands, again, are not synced. And we've spoken to the student about this already, so they probably should fix that already. All right. So ready for the exam? The exam. We're getting away from scales now. We're going to get into a real-world example now. We are going to analyse our Mozart sonata, but probably not all of them. So I think this will do. So we've got K545 here. First two bars, we have real music up the top. And just again, for those of you who are possibly new to this, and this does all look a little bit like science fiction, these notes up here correspond to these notes that you can see here. Your Alberti bass, which is running through here, is running through here. And I'll give you 20 seconds now to use your new radiologist powers to deduce what's going on the screen up here. Have a look. All right, so the three things that I spotted is that a balance, I think, is an issue here. Unless your favourite note in K545 is the G, which is at the top of the Alberti bass, I would be saying to the student, I'd like to see some more browns in the right-hand notes and really not so many what's going on in the left-hand there. The fingers, if you look towards the right-hand side in the melody, you can see that that each note is not finishing before the next one starts. And we actually have three notes held down simultaneously at the... In fact, I'll just show you, just over corresponding to this, just over here. We've got three notes held down simultaneously as the fingers aren't coming back up. All the good pedaling in the world is not going to make that sound unblurry, a point we can again make to the student, and we can invite them. Let's try this and see if we can get rid of that. And the Alberti bass itself now, we've got grid lines here, and the whole point of the grid lines is that things should be aligning to the grid lines. I would point out to you which notes are ahead or behind the beats, except it almost defies description here because it's so far out. And so we would have a look at where we want things lined up, and if this is my lesson, we're going to have a chat about the left hand for a bit. And of the 87 things we could talk about, and the three we've chosen to highlight here, that's the one we're going to go with next. So there we are. I think we'll head back into our $100 million studio and we'll see what's next. This is on the 10th floor, this one, the recording studio is big space. And we'll take a look inside. For those eagle-eyed amongst you might actually think, gee, that looks a lot like Abbey Road Studios in London. Where I possibly lifted the photo from, notwithstanding, let's imagine what I've actually asked for is a faithful recreation of Abbey Road Studio in London, because I like the acoustics. And so all the materials have been reproduced and all the dimensions, and we have a lot of pianos. There's a Yamaha CFX, there's a Steinway, there's a Bösendorf, Fazioli, a Shigeru as well, and you take your pick. Because these pianos don't sound good by themselves, we have flown out, and this is really important, a team of people to look after this. We have sound engineers who know which microphones to use and where to put them, and can handle the post-production as well. And we have a piano tuner on standby so that pretty much every time a student pauses between movements, they're going to be moving in and tightening the unisons. So we got $100 million, we can do this. So it's all good. We also have, and it's not in shot, we have a green screen so that we can do video recordings and we can make this look like it's not in this studio, and that's important for reasons we'll look at in a second. Tim did say we were going to block things out today, and part of the reason is I want you to be able to see these in a moment. And, of course, video recording facilities, and there is absolutely, since I'm standing at the lectern and it's what I was talking about, there will be a digital instrument somewhere in the room. And don't get me wrong, by the way, if I'm recording in this space, the vast majority of the time I'm going to be using the acoustic instrument, just for those of you who are pigeonhole me later on. So why would we want this? Well, the shareable recordings, obviously. Grandma loves these at the end of the year, and a lot of you do that already. But one of the big reasons why I'd want a resource like this is that not everybody who signs up for music lessons wants to do what is the equivalent of public speaking that is performing. And for a lot of students, it is a colossal nightmare that clouds the final few months of every year, and we all need our studio recitals. But unfortunately, if they don't do that and they don't want to do exams either, then the question is, what is it that we're working towards here? And where is my tangible evidence that all the hard work I've done is actually led somewhere? If you can make some studio quality recordings, you've got a whole new ball game for students like that, and there are a lot more students like that than we actually give students credit for. And the reason that we're not aware of that is because a lot of those students quit. And they should be in our studios, and they would be in our studios if they had something to do, apart from the nightmare that is the annual recital. So there's that. It also allows for analysis and lessons. Not all students are going to be invested in the high-tech garage band that we looked at before, and they want to, in an old-fashioned sense, hear what it is that they just did, but they're not going to hear what it is that they just did if the recording itself isn't good. And so these are pristine, and anything that's wrong, that is the performer's fault, because they can hear exactly what just happened. We can use progress snapshots here. I would be recording students pretty much after their very first lesson, right through until their very first concerto. And we'd be keeping all of those. We're going to come back and look at that as well. And a resource like this is going to attract students from other studios because they're going to need to make recordings too, not least of which is because so many piano competitions around the world now have opened up video auditioning for things, which is trivial if you've got the equipment, and it makes your students sound awful if you don't. Now, this is all well and good, and I like this studio very much, and I all think you would like to have it too. However, there is a budget shortfall of approximately $100 million. And the recording reality check, for those of you who don't, just show of hands, who here has actually recorded students and does from time to time? It's some, it's usually some, but not lots of hands. And part of the reason it's not lots is because doing it is really hard. So here are some of the reasons that, that people don't do the recordings and the reason they sound so bad. It is not one of the nine concert grands that I named before that you're doing. It's whatever you're teaching on at home, which is almost certainly not perfectly in tune because your tuner doesn't turn up every day. It is badly recorded because you're using the wrong microphones and you're putting them in the wrong position. And you certainly couldn't afford the spectacularly good ones. There is no post-production or mastering smarts on this, so it's whatever you happen to record, probably on your iPhone at the time. It looks like it was shot in someone's bedroom because it was absolutely shot in someone's bedroom, because that's where we're teaching, or a lounge room somewhere. So it doesn't seem super professional. Even before anyone's heard anything, it looks like this is probably not going to be great. And the sound matches, for those of you who've heard this and you know what I mean, or have gone and tried it, because the sign on it says you can. Those pianos which are in railway stations which say try me, that is very nearly, no matter how good your piano sounds at home, when you listen to the recording, somehow it sounds like that. And so I will acknowledge these are actually obstacles to doing recordings. There is a way around this. You don't need professional recording gear at all. You don't even need a microphone. And what I'm about to show you has really only been possible in the past few years, but there's lots of companies now doing this. You will need the following, and again, I want you to register how many of these things you probably already have. A video camera of some sort, for which your phone will be fine. And in fact, really, you need two of these. And the reason we need two of these is because if you want to be able to make edits and you're videoing things, you're going to need a second shot so that when you're splicing between take two and take 27, we don't get the person playing suddenly jump to a different position or wearing a different shirt or whatever. Actually, the different shirt's not going to help you either way. You've got to manage that. I couldn't really find a graphic that looked like a green screen, but that's what the third thing along is. Or in the case of what you're about to see, a black screen, which again sounds very expensive and fancy, but I got it at Lincraft. For those of you who are here and from Australia, which is just a material store, and it's just black material. You do need some good lighting. So you're going to any camera store, and you're probably spending a couple hundred dollars there to get some reasonable lighting. You need that digital instrument that we talked about before, because everything I'm talking about now is completely impossible on an acoustic. And you need that laptop that we worked through before that everybody has. You do need one more thing that I haven't put up here, because you all would have focused on that, because you wouldn't have known what it was. This is the missing ingredient in here. You need a piano sample library. Now, some of you are across these already, but a lot of people aren't. And for reasons passing all understanding, they don't put really good ones in digital pianos, and they should. What's actually happened with these is that I didn't use that space before at Abbey Road Studios by accident. I use that space because the first product that's listed here, and the second one is excellent as well, it's just in a different space, was a team of sound engineers who went into Abbey Road Studios in London, pulled out their finest grand piano, and recorded every single note, every single which way. It is 300 gigabytes of recordings of different notes at different volumes. And the result is that when you play a middle C on whatever awful keyboard you might have that's hooked up to your computer, the keyboard's not playing back the note, the sample library's playing back the note. And what you hear is Abbey Road Studios in London with a middle C coming out of a 9-foot concert grand. And if you really want to convince yourself of that, don't mess around with middle C. Play an octave down in the bass and have a listen to that. And then it thunders the way that you'd expect from a 9-foot grand, and in exactly the same way the digital pianos really, really don't. And I don't want you to confuse me with somebody who thinks that everything I do is fabulous. And then you listen to the notes up the top and they are perfectly in tune, because you don't have a tuner on standby, but I promise you the people who are recording this sample library, and it takes them months to do this, they do have somebody coming in and tweaking every time they think something is this much out of tune. I'll come and fix it. And so it's always perfectly ready to go.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to Philip on stage at Piano Pivot Live. Of course, listening to it is very different to being able to see what he was doing. So if you want to watch the whole thing in high def with multi cameras and his slides embedded so you can see what we were all laughing at from time to time, then you must get a virtual lounge ticket. And you can do that at pianopivotlive.com/virtual. And you can also watch a 3-minute wrap-up video of the event there to get you excited and find out more about what was actually happening at the live event. And you actually get, with your virtual ticket, it's about 10 hours of literally the best speakers in music education in the world. And you also get to download the Delegate Playbook as well, which is full of great offers and more information about our speakers and the events and note-taking spaces and all that kind of stuff. So the price, it's only $129. Head to pianopivotlive.com/virtual. And my Top Music Pro members, you get 50% off that price. And your coupon code is in our Academy once you've logged in. So make sure you use that if you're a Top Music Pro member. Now, if you did miss Piano Pivot Live 2020, then you must come to our next one. And I'm excited to let you guys be the first people to know that owing to the huge requests and, let's face it, demands from our delegates and teachers, I will be running another one of these events. And it's going to be held in Melbourne in July 2022 with full details to be announced early next year to give you plenty of time to prepare. And the goal with moving it to July is that it will hopefully coincide better with the USA summer holidays and northern summer holidays, so Canada and USA. And of course, we've got the winter holidays here in Australia. So if you are coming in from overseas, Melbourne will be a little bit grey at that time of the year. So make sure you schedule in a trip to the Great Barrier Reef or somewhere a little bit further north where our tropical region is, north of Brisbane, so that you can get some sun if you're coming from the northern hemisphere and want to get some sun while you're in Australia. So more details about that to come, but I just wanted to give you a little bit of a teaser of that. And I hope you enjoyed listening to Philip. So next week on the podcast, we're going to have another Piano Pivot Live speaker featured. It's going to be Nicola Canton, who traveled all the way from Ireland to present with us a couple of times over the 2 days. And in next week's episode, I'm going to be sharing her talk, which was titled Inclusive Piano Teaching Tactics, How to Reach the Students Who Need Music Most. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast from topmusic.co. See you next time. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and courses, including an extended cut of today's episode. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.